modern weapons are extremely precise. So the risk for me is actually that they're going to do exactly what we tell them to do. The second problem is too much faith in technology. That is, the history of war is the history of measure and countermeasures. The moment your enemy knows how your algorithm works, it's not going to let you stay there and wait for you to kill it.
Kampfflugzeuge, Schützengräben, Panzer, so kennen wir die Bilder aus den Kriegen unserer Zeit. Doch daneben tauchen neue Schlagzeilen auf. Drohnenangriffe, explodierende Pager, Hightech als Waffe. Welche Rolle spielt dabei künstliche Intelligenz? Mauro Gili forscht am Center for Security Studies der ETH Zürich. Er beschäftigt sich mit den neuen Technologien im Krieg. Im Januar 2025 erklärte er uns am AHA-Festival, wie KI das Schlachtfeld verändert. Seine Lecture hört ihr jetzt.
Thanks everyone for being here. It's at the same time motivating to see so many people that want to learn more about the world, and also intimidating because it's 9 p.m. on a Saturday evening, so if I don't meet your expectation, you will be angry at me. Hopefully, you will leave this room after these 45 minutes together. My ambition is that you learn something more about the world, or at least you have a better understanding before you came here. And thanks to the organizer for the flattering invitation. I'm always happy to talk to people about what I study. And so this is very, very flattering for me. And so let me clarify. So I study military technology. This doesn't mean that I, at Zurich, I'm not passionate about war. Let me, often people ask me whether I do not actually, I cannot see blood. I can't even see when there are athletes, they get injured. I cannot see them, so it disturbs me. So there's nothing fun for me in that. I like the technology. Given, I assume many of you were in the previous lecture, I was thinking if I could go back 20 years, probably I would have studied engineering, actually. I didn't. And so at one point in my life, I started to become passionate. And so what I shared with you today is what I learned for my job. So given that you are here on a Saturday evening, yeah, I tend to assume you follow the news. And as you know, the discussion, the debate about artificial intelligence has grown significantly over the past 10, 15 years in about artificial intelligence in general, and in particular, of course, when it comes to its application to war. Here, there are just a couple of the thousands of articles that have been written, and one mentions when about 10 years ago, prominent experts and people signed a petition to ban the application of artificial intelligence to war. These were, among the others, were Elon Musk, before he became controversial, Steve Wozniak, one of the founders of Apple, Stephen Hawking, and many others. So they signed a petition saying we should not have autonomous weapons at all. So what is generally called killer robots. My issue with, not with this letter, with the debate about artificial intelligence in war is that it generally focuses much more on the implication, on the consequences, than on it, what it actually is. So people have strong and totally legitimate opinion, but there's generally not much discussion about what it really means to use artificial intelligence for military purposes. And so my ambition for tonight is to explain to you what this really is. I will tell you some personal consideration at the end, but let me stress, my goal is not to influence your opinion in one way or another. My goal is to share what I learned with you. And for those of you by chance who are here, just out of curiosity, without following much the news, this is something that is really affects day-to-day life and death, unfortunately. So these are just a couple of articles that come up over the past year about the conflict in the Middle East, with Israel using artificial intelligence to identify potential targets. Same thing for the war in Ukraine, other articles that have discussed how Ukraine has used artificial intelligence to strike both Russian targets within Russian territory, Russian forces within Ukrainian territory, as well as to intercept missiles and drones that Russia shoots at Ukraine. And of course, when we talk about artificial intelligence, it plays, and the application to war, it plays a big role in the new, in the rising competition between China and the US, with some people going as far as to claim that if the US falls behind in this realm, this might make the, it might be the key difference between victory and defeat against China. This is an opinion, just want to say I'm reporting it. And of course, you might have followed the discussion and the debate about the export restrictions that the US government has imposed on semiconductors. These concerns are a driving aspect behind these export restrictions, because the US wants to limit the advances by China in the most advanced artificial intelligence field, and in particular in the applications to the military. So, as I was saying earlier, the debate about artificial intelligence has grown a lot over the past 10 years, with people calling for banning killer robots. And here, the elephant in the room is autonomous systems already exist. This is very important to know. So there are systems that are fully automated. And now I'm going to briefly discuss three and explain the military logic behind. And let me be very clear, by explaining the military logic, I don't want to say that this is a good thing. I'm just explaining what purposes they fulfill, and then you can totally legitimate conclude that you see the logic, but still these technologies should not exist. So this is the Phalanx CHOOSE. CHOOSE is an acronym that stands for Close-In Weapon System. It exists since the 1980s, so this is not a recent technology. And it arises from two key needs of ships. It is mounted on ships. It's the last line of defense for military ships. So the first need of military ships is they are extremely vulnerable. So in comparison to land platform, like a tank or an armored vehicle, if you hit a ship and you inflict damage, it may sink. And way more people are on a military ship than in a tank, and then they are way more complex and therefore much more costly. So a country is going to suffer a big loss. So that's a key aspect, the vulnerability of ships. The second factor leading to the fielding of this technology is that ships are... The threat of missiles to ships is particularly serious and difficult to address, for a reason that so-called sea skimming missiles, meaning missiles that fly very close to the sea surface, are going to be detected when it's too late for a sailor, for a personnel, to engage in. So the reaction time is not available, is not sufficient to engage these missiles. And this is why this technology was developed. What it does, it has a radar that detects an incoming threat. It identifies it as a threat. And the moment it identifies it as a missile or a drone or whatever, it automatically shoots. Now, again, you can totally think, oh, these things should not exist. This is just the military logic behind why it was fielded. Another technology that is fully automated, and it also exists since the 1980s, are anti-radiation missiles, where radiation has, fortunately, nothing to do with nuclear radiation. It has to do with the radiation of radars. So radars is one of the most important technologies, both military and commercial, developed over the past 80 years, in the sense that in comparison to human sight, he can see at way, way longer range. It functions during day and night, good and bad weather. So this is really the eyes of any armed forces. So it allows to have to monitor a large area of the sky constantly. This is why when countries launch military operations, the first targets is generally enemy radars. This is what Russia did in the very early mornings of February 2026 when it attacked Ukraine. This is how the US has started all its previous wars and so forth. So this technology, what it does, anti-radiation missiles, what they do, so think about a radar like a flashlight. So when a flashlight is on, you can see the light. So a radar just operates only at a different frequency, but it's the same principle. So the moment it's on, it's sending a signal that it can be captured. So anti-radiation missile, what they do, they detect the radar signal, and then they follow it towards the source to destroy it. So this is really a way to destroy radars. And also in this case, this is a military, there is a military need, because carrying out this operation with a manned platform would be either unfeasible or too risky to do it, because ground-based air defenses are extremely lethal, and so they pose a serious threat to aircraft. Another type of autonomous system that exists, this has been, is the LRASM. It's developed by the U.S. The U.S. started working on it in 2007. So if you want to kind of take a moment where the U.S. really started looking at China as a serious threat, I would say the development of this missile is a threshold in the U.S. foreign policy. And so what this missile does, similar to the anti-radiation missile, it looks, but instead of looking for a source of emissions, it looks for specific external features of ships. And it matches these external features with a library of features. And the moment they match, so that it matches with Chinese ships, it goes and it strikes them. And so this missile performs a role critical for the U.S. military that is in the Indo-Pacific. The U.S. is at a key logistical disadvantage, meaning China has all its territory that it can use for bases, for taking off, for launching missiles. The U.S. doesn't have that. So if you look at the Pacific, it's really huge. The U.S. has only a couple of bases like Okinawa, Guam, Anderson, and these bases are, of course, the first targets in the case of war by China. And so the U.S. has developed these missiles so that it can still inflict damage to the Chinese ships, even though like it doesn't have the possibility of having many sorties, that is, many trips by its aircraft. Okay, so this is just to provide the perspective. So here is probably, I'm going to summarize if there's anything you want to take home from my discussion today, is going to be in the next two slides. We live in the age of long-range and high-precision warfare. What it means is that it's possible modern weapons can strike targets at very long range, meaning beyond visual range, and with high precision. By high precision, I mean the error. When you want to hit a target, modern missiles can hit in an area that is below 1 meter from the intended target. So you can really hit what you want. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that countries have unlimited supplies of missiles. We hear, for like in the case of Ukraine, we hear discussion of Ukraine running low on ammunition. It doesn't mean that all countries have these munitions. Russia, for example, early in the war started having troubles. But these munitions are the most important because these are the ones that allow to hit, or at least try to hit, that is, engage high-value targets, that is, critical military targets, bases, command and control center, weapons depot, you name it. Now, the key aspect is the following, that long-range, high-precision missiles and munitions are completely useless without the capacity to detect, identify, geolocate, and track enemy target. So this is critical. So when, for example, the U.S. provided the HIMARS missiles to Ukraine, this was June 2022, a lot of people said, oh, this is a game changer. Yeah, it's a game changer only because these missiles have a long range and can strike target at long range with high precision. Yes, but this is a game changer only if Ukraine knows which targets to hit. Otherwise, it's completely useless. You're going to strike God knows what, right? Same when the U.S. provided Ukraine with the ATACMS. These are ballistic missiles, same type of discussion. And so this I was saying, this is, to me, the most important take-home message, that is, generally, the current debate about war focuses a lot about the weapons, but completely ignores these aspects. This is the people in the military call it, it's an awful name, it's called the kill chain. It refers to the set of steps that you need to carry out in order to engage with high-precision targets at long range. And in fact, this is, so the kind of key focus of tonight is the U.S., as well as Israel, as well as other countries, have used artificial intelligence exactly to this goal, that is to detect and identify enemy targets. The U.S., for example, started already during the global war on terror for striking terrorists with drone strikes, and Israel, I mentioned earlier, did the same. So So what is the problem with detection? The problem is detection. So say you want to detect whether there is a potential target coming to you. So let's say for air defenses, so for defenses purposes. If you look at the sky, you might, and you try to see whether there is something, you might not see it, even though the target was already there, this red spot. It was there. The difference is that it was a dark blue spot over blue background. So I assume few of you could see it, because dark blue doesn't stand out over a blue background. But if we try to make this point stand out, you immediately start to see it, right? It becomes much more evident. It becomes, for those of you with backgrounds in the social sciences, with statistically different from the background. Those of you with background in engineering and physics, this is obvious, this is signal processing. Now, what we can do, we can also try to cancel the background disturbances to further help us see the dot in the sky. And so this is what signal processing does, or it has been doing for the past 70 years. And this is what artificial intelligence, specifically machine learning, helped to do even better. And I'm going to explain why that is the case. Now I told you the kill chain is detection, but also identification. Why is identification important? And this is the reason. Because the moment you see a target doesn't mean it is an enemy target. It could be an enemy target, but it could also be friendly forces. It could be neutral forces, ambulances. It could be a commercial airliner. It could be decoys. Your enemy wants you to waste your highly valuable precision munition on nothing. So, and there are plenty of stories. For example, Yugoslavia in 1999 created this wooden mock-up, so think like aircraft made out of wood. It covered it with aluminium foil, and so aluminium foil so that it would reflect radar waves. And the US Air Force was striking these aircraft on the ground, thinking, oh, we're destroying all the fleet of Yugoslavia, when in fact it wasn't. These were just wooden mock-up. Okay. So, yeah. So how does identification work? Many of you are familiar. This is Shazam. If you're not familiar, you can download it on your phone. You have learned something useful from me tonight, at least. So Shazam is an app that allows you, when you hear a song you like, rather than going to your friend and say, oh, do you know what the song that does na-na-na-na-na? And, you know, you can use this app and immediately tells you the singer, and the name of the song, and then it lets you listen to it and even buy it. Shazam relies on three key features. First is a sensor, that is the microphone of your phone. The second is an algorithm that matches the song that you're listening, specifically the frequency changes. Very complex, but I'm simplifying. And then it matches it, and this is a critical aspect, with a library of songs that it has stored. So that it matches the song you're listening with a library that it has recorded. And this is what signal processing is. And this is actually an accurate description of, for example, sonar. Those of you familiar with Hunt for Red October is a marvelous movie about submarines. There is a scene of the sonar man, and this is actually, how it's presented in the movie is not accurate, because at the time there a lot of these tasks were already done by signal processors that is automated. And just to provide you an idea, the Shazam I just described, this was the key advantage during the Cold War that the United States had towards the Soviet Union, that the U.S. could use passive sonar, that is, use a microphone, that is called hydrophone because it's using water, to capture sound emitted by submarines, and it would match it with this huge library it had gathered over decades, and then it would match it, it would be able to see, to say, okay, this is a Soviet submarine, this specific class, and this is the specific hull number. Something like saying, this is the plate number of a given car. And here is give you another interesting example, again, signal processing, why it's very important. This is a MiG-21. So the U.S., like in air warfare during World War II until the 1960s, was mostly short-range engagements. What is called dogfights. So you have these jet fighters chasing each other and trying to shoot each other down, doing the maneuvering so as to go on the back of the enemy, because that's how you can shoot it down. At one point, the US Air Force decides or realizes that you can avoid getting yourself in danger by trying to strike the enemy at longer range with air-to-air missiles. The idea was brilliant, but there was a key limitation. The limitation was that when you try to strike an enemy at long range, how do you know whether it's an enemy aircraft or a friendly aircraft? That you cannot do. At the time, you couldn't do it. And the US Air Force was absolutely concerned about potential fratricide, that is, you kill your own guys. And so it said, it forced US Air Force pilot, they detect an aircraft at long range, they need to get close to it. Once they visually identify, say, okay, this is a North Vietnamese jet fighter, then you pull back because the missile needs to have a sufficiently long range for the engagement, and then you shoot. What is the problem? The problem is that the North Vietnamese pilot is not waiting for you to shoot at it, right? He's going to chase you and try to shoot you down with the can. So the US military, the US Air Force comes up with an idea. They say, how about we develop a radar with a very narrow beam, think about a laser, and we point it in the engine, that is here, and by pointing it there, the rotation of the engine is going to interrupt the reflection of the beam, and so we can count the rotation per minute of the engine. We have a library of rotation per minute of different engines of different aircraft, and in this way, we can positively identify an aircraft as enemy or friend. And this is how signal processing played, essentially opened the way for long-range engagements in air warfare. And of course, then when it comes about identification, the global war on terror is the most prominent case. Here, I'm sure some of you have read about, for example, some terrorists, whether Al-Qaeda terrorists or from other groups, mistakenly made a phone call. The phone call gets intercepted, and the CIA has previous recording, like a library of recordings of terrorists, and he matches the voice, and so at that point says, yeah, this is the guy we are looking for, so you can strike it. So that's the logic behind signal processing. Now, let's get to artificial intelligence. I told you earlier, artificial intelligence can do what signal processing does, but even better. And what can artificial intelligence in particular do? Two main things. There are actually more, I'll talk later, but two main things. The first is anomaly detection. The other is pattern recognition. Anomaly detection is, think about, I take 100 pictures of this room, or 1,000, millions, I have this room in any conditions. At one point, anything that never came here is going to be flagged by my algorithm as something, an anomaly. And this is, okay, I need to look into it. So this is really, really powerful. Same is patterns of behavior or patterns among images. So here is cars. Cars have specific features that all share, and so you can use these patterns. And this is why, this is just one of the many articles that have come up over the past few years, this is why artificial intelligence defeats the best, so it outperforms the best physicians, for example, at identifying very early stage cancer. The reason is that artificial intelligence can detect minor anomalies and then associate these minor anomalies as markers of later on stages on cancer, and so it allows to be way, way more efficient. And this is why, of course, in war, it plays such an important role as well. For one more reason, that in contrast to cancer is not reacting to artificial intelligence, so it's not trying to avoid being detected, at least until now, hopefully. Your enemy does. Like, war is about avoiding getting killed, first of all. And the key driver of war is a measure-countermeasure dynamic, which in the age of advanced sensors means trying to avoid being detected. How you do it? Camouflage, like, very simple. Or here is a picture from 2002 in Afghanistan of a Taliban sniper who was hiding, and you cannot see it, in fact, under, like, the arrow points to it. So he was hiding and creating significant problems for a group of Marines. It was hiding under the rock, so it could not be detected by thermal sensors. And then he had got there before anyone could figure out, so it created a lot of problems. And of course, camouflage is nothing new. This is very old. So here you see World War I aircraft with camouflage intended to limit the difference with the area in Western Europe. Or here you have World War II aircraft with camouflage for operating in the desert. And even today, here is an Israeli F-16 to operate in the desert. This is a Russian Su-30, operates over bodies of water. That's why it has a blue-toned camouflage. And of course, camouflage gets even higher. Those of you who follow military technology might recognize this picture. These are stealth aircraft. This is the first stealth aircraft, the F-117. This is the latest developed by the US, is the B-2. The weird shape is, in fact, intended to deflect away radar waves. So it is intended to limit detection by extremely powerful sensors, as I mentioned earlier, that is radars. But of course, you do not need all fancy technology to avoid detection. For example, these are terrorists, the terrorists who carry out the 9/11 attack. How did they avoid detection? By seemingly pretending they were civilians, right? And very interesting in this regard, this is the so-called Abbottabad files. It's on the CIA website. These are documents that US Special Forces recovered when they carry out the killing of Osama bin Laden. They brought it on, and these guidelines were providing Al-Qaeda operatives with a lot of suggestions on how to avoid detection. For example, of course, avoid using mobile phones. Others, move in the shadow, literally. So that is, you should go out only around 5 p.m. and move across next to buildings so as to use the shadow of buildings to cover so that regular cameras on drones could not detect you. So I told you earlier that artificial intelligence can do two things, anomaly detection and pattern recognition. I said also it's more complicated, so here comes the second part of the story. Artificial intelligence also helps with classification. That is, in comparison to signal processing, it keeps, once it has learned how to classify objects, it can keep doing it. And it does it way faster and much more efficiently and effectively than you are human beings. So you can keep collecting huge amount of data. And in fact, when we talk about artificial intelligence, this is really what we talk about, huge data sets that are constantly increased. And the second aspect is data fusion. Data fusion meaning you have data from very different sources and you merge them so that you can analyze them together. Simple example, think about you have a data set with about from people, about their mobile phone history, who they text, where they go, and then they have medical history, and you merge them. And so you try to see potential associations, statistical associations in the data. The best example to explain this is to understand how artificial intelligence is coming a role is to also look at the improvement in sensors available that has happened over the past 20 years. So this is a picture of the same area using different cameras that use different parts of the visible spectrum, or the visible light of the spectrum. So to make the story very short, as you can see that in some pictures, green stands out, blue stands out, red. So this is not just because they're a nice picture, but essentially what they do, they make stand out some key details that other filters do not make stand out. What is the application? Consider this picture. So in this, you see the yellow is some minerals on the surface of the Earth, and the red and green here are others. So by merging them, you do not need to decide what do I prefer to have stand out, the yellow or the green or red. By merging the two pictures, you can take advantage of both filters, right? And this is what it means, data fusion, that you take all these pictures and you sum them up together, and so everything stands out. Think about the picture I showed you earlier about the red and the blue dots. It means that you can have many different things stand out. What's the military application of this? Consider, for example, the development of so-called wideband radars over the past 20 years. So radars, generally satellite radars, are reflected by foliage. So this is why you generally guerrilla fighters operate in area with thick vegetation, because that's where they can conceal their presence. But now, with the development of radars that operate at different frequencies, these radars are not reflected by foliage, and therefore you have so-called foliage penetrating radar, and so you can see much more in depth. And by using all these frequencies and merging them together, you can see different things. Does it make sense? So, 7 minutes more. So let me skip. Sorry, I had a lot of things. This is just a simple picture. You see at night, and this is a night camera. So this is the advantage of sensors. This picture, why that? Just, I wanted to introduce sonar, but many of you might not be familiar with sonar on top of what I just said. Ultrasound is actually sonar. So that is, you use sound reflection and you transform this sound reflection in an image to make sense of it. So next time you hear about sonar, you can recall about this picture, okay? Okay, so let's get to, sorry, the computer is slow and sorry for it. Some sort of data on top of radar and electro-optical sensor I discussed and sonar that I just discussed, digital geospatial and behavioral data. That is, you see who is texting whom. So I'm in a lunch group, and this lunch group is actually a group of people who have criminal history. So that's a marker for potential bad behavior. Okay. Similar, the geolocation of my phone gets hooked to different antennas, and coincidentally, every time my phone is in an area, there is an explosion. So there's more indication that I might not be a good person. Then, of course, many different apps on mobile phones track your specific location, and so even when you do not, the connection with an antenna is not sufficient, you can still infer some potential behavior from that. Or other behavior is, I frequently change my SIM card. This guy wants to get better plans with mobile phone companies way too often than normal. What's going on, right? So all these type of data can be merged in big data set to use it to try to assess the probability of being a potential terrorist. And this is actually what Israel did. So some of you, this is the first article that broke the story from 1972. It's an Israeli-Palestinian magazine. So it was April, something like that, last year. It described how Israel was using this gospel, it's called, artificial intelligence system to identify potential terrorists. So again, high precision, long range, but who are the terrorists? So this is how Israel was doing. And these two articles from the New York Times, and I'm going to put these slides on my website, so you can then find the articles if you're interested. These two articles from the Washington Post and the New York Times went more in detail. For example, very interesting, they say Hamas was covering holes on the ground with a very specific type of fabric, and the Israeli forces fed this data to the artificial intelligence system, and in 30 minutes it provided the key locations of potential holes on the ground where missiles were hidden, that to a team of intelligent analysts would have taken something like a week or two. So this is the key aspect of artificial intelligence. It can do things way more effectively, way more efficiently, and much faster. Similar artificial intelligence has played a big role in intercepting missiles. I'm sure you all know about Israeli, both the short range and the long range air defense missiles. This is the one that intercepts Hamas and Hezbollah rockets, and it is based on artificial intelligence. That is, it calculates the trajectory of the rocket based on the previous trajectory, so that then it assesses whether it's going to fall over, for example, the desert, and so there is no reason to waste an intercepting missile, or it's going to land over populated territory, and in the case, it's going to interfere. Same thing when Israel, when Iran launched more than 300 missiles last spring against Israel, the high success rate was due again because of artificial intelligence. In fact, this was something that caught most experts by surprise, that Israel managed to intercept ballistic missiles. Ballistic missiles are missiles that follow a ballistic trajectory, so they reach a suborbital altitude, and then at that point they just fall by gravity. And the speed they reach, which is more than Mach 10, like really, really high speed, is such that make them very, very difficult to hit. Last year, for the first time, really, we discovered that despite the speed, it is actually possible with very advanced software, that is artificial intelligence, to intercept at least some of these missiles. Okay. I have three more minutes, so let me just go very quickly. Oop. Most dangerous place in the world. This is a picture from Ukrainian Armed Forces classifying Russian aircraft. So this is using artificial intelligence to classify targets for defending Ukraine skies. Same thing, same type of, this is small drones. And this is for ground targets. And of course, this is not limited. So Ukraine at one point developed an app which here you see, that a Ukrainian citizen can download. And so when they see an aircraft or whatever, they can take a picture, and the app automatically provides not only the picture, but also the geolocation and the orientation of the picture. And it is immediately fed to the command and control center so that they have a real-time information about a potential threat arriving. I'll quick here. So the curvature of the Earth is a big problem for ground-based radars because these violet areas is areas you cannot see threats. And Russia has used it to send missiles over riverbeds, so where it's much more difficult to intercept missiles. How Ukraine has reacted is by developing acoustic sensors that as soon as they capture a sound that is very similar to a drone or a missile, they inform Ukraine, and of course they have an algorithm that matches with existing sounds so as to maximize the probability of interception. And last thing I say, and again, so sorry, I cut it short, this is a fascinating article on The Economist. The Economist editor, the journalist of The Economist who covers the military is really, really qualified. And he summarized his research that explained how the U.S. developed an algorithm, artificial intelligence software, that could accurately predict attack by the Taliban in Afghanistan. So they had a very good idea of when attacks were going to happen, as well as in which parts, based on previous recorded history. I'll stop here with two words, and sorry for not finishing. So the first is, artificial intelligence is extremely, or modern weapons are extremely precise. So the risk for me is actually that they're going to do exactly what we tell them to do. So when we hit a hospital, is because whatever reasons, we have told the weapons to hit the hospital. So precise machines are not going to strike the wrong targets. They're going to strike exactly what we tell them. We might think that that target was something different, for example, for other reasons. So that's the first, to me, the one of the real problems. The second problem is too much faith in technology. That is, the history of war is the history of measure and countermeasures. The moment your enemy knows how your algorithm works, is not going to let you stay there and wait for you to kill it. It's just going to take adaptation so as to nullify the effectiveness of your algorithm. And with this, thanks again for coming. It was my pleasure, and thanks again for the invitation.
Danke, dass du diese Podcast-Episode gehört hast. Ich hoffe, sie hat dir gefallen und du konntest etwas Neues erfahren und lernen. Und wenn du schon mal da bist, lass uns doch eine Bewertung oder ein paar Sternchen da. Das würde uns sehr helfen. Und wenn du mehr Vorträge vom AHA-Festival hören willst, abonniere diesen Podcast und folge uns auf Instagram. Auch über Feedback freuen wir uns sehr. Schreib uns eine Mail an am@aha-festival.ch. AHA, ein Podcast für Wissen, ist eine Zusammenarbeit von Christoph Fellmann und mir, Anna Matijasiewicz. Mitproduziert und komponiert hat Nikola Miloš Mišić.